The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Brian E. Lau, creator of Staunch Ambition, and you are listening to the PBD Cast by John Orwater. Or wait. Orlando? Yes. John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 207. I hope all is well with you out there. I'm doing well, although I'm somewhat fed up with this incredibly hot weather that we've been having here in Columbus, Ohio over the last few days. I don't know, I'm just kind of ready for fall, I guess. I look at the calendar and it's October, and it shouldn't be 92 degrees outside. So, but hey, what can we do? We can complain about the weather. We can't do anything about it. But what we can do is that we can get ourselves strapped in and ready to go for another fantastic episode of this podcast. And who is going to appear as my guest on this episode of the PVD Cast? None other than Mr. Arvell Jones. Now, Arvell, of course, is known for being the co-creator of Misty Knight in the Marvel Comics universe. And we're going to talk about how he co-created her along with his collaborations with Tony Isabella. We're also going to talk a little bit about his All-Star Squadron work and even a new project, which, if I may, I'd like to tell you a little bit about where you can find some information about this new project, because during our conversation, I think I caught Arvell off guard with this particular question about where folks can find information about it. So here we go. The new project is called Reign of the Underdog. It is an autobiographical comic featuring the rapper and actor Lazarus. Resurgence Comics is putting it out. They do not have a website just yet, but they do have a pretty active Facebook page. So if you're looking to get more information on Reign of the Underdog, just search for Resurgence Comics in Facebook, and there you go. Even, actually, there's also a Facebook page for Reign of the Underdogs if you want to search for that too. But I will mention that that Facebook page for Reign of the Underdog hasn't been updated, so if I were you and I wanted to keep tabs on this project, I'd probably stick with the Facebook page for Resurgence Comics. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with the legendary Arvell Jones. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome to the PVD Cast, Mr. Arvell Jones. Arvell, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great.
How's life in Detroit treating you?
Life in Detroit has, it's always busy here. And we're always involved in a bunch of projects and things, but, you know, it's been great.
Cool. Well, I think my listeners probably know you best as the co-creator of Misty Knight. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that character first off, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yeah, fine. Yeah.
What was your inspiration for creating that character, Misty Knight? Was there a particular person that you had in mind, or was it a adding in a bunch of different people that maybe from your background you knew, or how did you come up with the inspiration for that epic character?
It was actually out of frustration. I was watching a lot of TV. This is before the black exploitation films started coming out. And I was just commenting to my brother that there's just not enough characters that I know when I'm looking at the movie theater. I mean, there's like Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, Rochester and Amos and Andy. none of these, I mean, Sidney Poitier, I've known some people that kind of remind me of him and Harry Belafonte, but mostly everybody else, seemed to be buffoons. And I just was frustrated as a young man that I just didn't see many characters that look like me. And to the point where my brother was like, well, it looks like you got to create some. So I was like, okay, so this is like right out of high school. I'd been creating some characters. And then, I sort of had a little portfolio of characters that I wanted to, do comic books or films on or something, And my buddies were doing the same thing, building their universes. And my buddies were like Jim Starlin, and Rich Buckler, and Al Milgrom, and Greg Theakston, and Tom Orzechowski, and all these guys were, we were all trying to get into comics together. It was about 15 of us. And, so I just started creating some characters that I knew, both black, white, and otherwise. Mm-hmm. And Misty was sort of a mixture of my mother and the girlfriend I was dating at the time.
Really?
And yeah. My mother was a nurse, a registered nurse who worked the night shift at a hospital in what's now called Midtown Detroit. And she used to have to take the bus to work. She'd leave about 11:30. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't get back until maybe 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to carry a 38 pistol.
Really?
And with a hair trigger and hollow points. My father took her to the range and showed her how to shoot. And she's been shooting for some time. Anyway, she was familiar with guns. She was born in the country in Mississippi. So she was very familiar with guns, breaking them down, cleaning them, putting the bullets back in. She knew almost everything.
Wow.
And at the same time, she was a nurse. And one time I asked her, I said, how do you reconcile, carrying a gun, hurt somebody, and you're a nurse? She said, well, I'm the best person to shoot that, to shoot somebody. She put it, I said, why? She says, because I can shoot him. I know where to shoot him and I know how to fix him up.
Well, you created Misty with some help from Tony Isabella. So what was it like working with Tony Isabella to create that character?
He was just trying to figure out a character that would be a sidekick to Iron Fist. And he just kind of said to me, he might dispute this these days. He's getting old. but he asked me when we first got on the Marvel premiere featuring Iron Fist book. He says, man, I want to do something different. I am tired of writing, the dragon's whips his tail for a back, a back or a sidekick, mm-hmm. I don't want him thinking, living in his head. I want him to be able to, to talk, and he needs somebody to talk with. So I said, ooh, I got just the character, and I explained my character, who was not named Misty at the time. Had all these powers and started trying to explain to him all what she could do. And he said, no. He said, she's too powerful. And I said, she's too powerful. He said, yeah. And you can't have a sidekick more powerful than the main character. And I said, why are you saying that? And he says, well, she's got two cybernetic arms and two bionic legs, and and so she's going to be more powerful than Iron Fist, who only has the fist. I said, well, Iron Fist can use both fists. You know, we can decide that. You know, he says, no. She's just too powerful. So I said, okay, I'm willing to compromise. So, you know, we set about depowering her, and we bargained all the way down to her having just a steel fist, you know, and, we went to the movies together, you know, because I was trying to get him used to the idea. At this point, this is like a couple of years after I created the character. So we went to the movies, and they were playing James Bond. What was the name of that movie? Live and Let Die.
Okay.
They had a character. Her name was Gloria Hendry. She was a CIA agent. She was, you know, pretty capable for, you know, Roger Moore's first outing as Bond. She was a good sidekick to him. You know, she could fight and kick and all that kind of stuff. And she could be sneaky, you know. And so they kind of made a good little team. And I said, see, you know, that'll work. And he was going, yeah, that works. And then we went to go see Black Belt Jones, which had Gloria Hendry in it and Jim Kelly. And we came out of that laughing and having fun. And, you know, he's been softened up enough. So he says, okay, let's do a black, you know, female character. And I said, you know, it'll be the first black female character at Marvel, you know, a superhero at Marvel. And this was, you know, Storm didn't exist at the time.
Mm-hmm. So right, Storm right.
Came, you know, came 6 months later. So. You know, he was all on board. He said he wasn't afraid of that, you know, being the first to, you know, do that kind of stuff. And so we got into the name. He said, I've been thinking about your name, and I don't like the name. I want to change your name to Misty. And I said, okay. I said, well, he said, we can keep her middle name, Mercedes. And I said, all right, that's cool. And then he said, I want her last name to be Knight. And I said, with a K. I said, it shouldn't just be, you know, black, like black as night. You know, let's do with a K. And he went, okay, no problem. You know, and that's pretty much how she was formed. And then the way we worked was like Marvel style back then. You know, he would kind of give me the plot. You know, we'd act it out and talk about it. And then he would give me a summary. And then I would draw it according to the summary. And we'd have a lot of fun, you know.
If I could interject for a minute, is that typically how things worked back at that time with Marvel? Is that you would have your creators kind of work the summary and then hand it off to the artist? Was that typical?
Well, for some it was. You know, there were people like Keith Pollard was working with Doug Munch on Master of Kung Fu, and I would get maybe, you know, 4 to 5, maybe 7 pages from Tony at the most. Keith might get a 30 or 40 pages.
Oh, okay.
That described everything. So okay. It really depended on, you know, how much work the writer was doing. I used to watch Don McGregor and Rich Buckler work, and Don would sort of write a little bit, and then he'd come over to Rich's house, and, you know, I was his assistant at the time, and I would watch Don go through all these conniptions and all these poses and help Rich design the front page and everything. And they laugh and joke and have a great time, you know? And so when me and Tony got together, that's kind of, we had known each other for some time, both as fans. And then, he kind of got in the business maybe a year or so ahead of me. And he became an assistant editor and then an editor. And then kind of brought me in to do British covers and things like that. So we kind of had a good relationship. So, yeah, you know, it just sort of depends on, you know, who the writer is. And a lot of times back then, there wasn't really Express Mail. Express Mail was just starting and FedEx was just getting started. And there was no fax machines. So you pretty much had to live in New York if you wanted to work in the comic industry, especially with the tight deadlines that comics had.
Well, I'm going to finish off our conversation with Misty Knight and still want to talk to you about a few other topics. But what's it like to see your creation on TV. You know, I mean, Luke Cage came out a couple of years ago on Netflix, and Missy Knight is heavily featured in that universe as well as the Defenders. What's it like to see your creation on TV?
Well, you can imagine I was a kid right out of high school, and Misty wasn't the first character I created, but she was the first one that I sold to Marvel or, you know, to any comic book company. So I was elated. You know, I was like, you know, it's been years. I only got to help create her, and then maybe a year later, Mark Grinwald called and said, hey, I really like this character. He called Tony. And Tony said, well, that's more Arvel's character, so go talk to him. You know, when he went to talk to me about it, you know, I said, well, hey, I got a whole Bible and all kinds of stuff on the character. And he was saying, well, send it to me. He said, but in the meantime, tell me about the character. So, I kind of told him her backstory and, you know, all the thought I'd put into it, you know, into the character and why the character would be a credible character for Marvel. And he soaked it up. So he asked me to send him everything. So I made a few adjustments. I didn't send him my original character. And her, you know, and her origin, I sent what me and Tony put together and sort of rewrote it a little bit to match that, but then kept a lot of the backstory and everything and sent it to him. And he said, this is great. We're going to add her to the Marvel universe. And I said, this is cool. You know, so years later, you know, I never got to touch the character again after that. You know, I did one issue. And me and Tony worked on it together, and we did one more issue of Iron Fist. And then I went over to DC to do some work. And when I came back, I thought maybe I'd have the opportunity. But Misty was, you know, the way Marvel worked back then is you were under an editor, and an editor controlled so many characters. And if the editor hired you to work on their books, then you could possibly, and you got hired on the book in which Misty was assigned to, and you had the opportunity to work with her. But I never got to work with her again. Never got to work on Iron Fist. And then when they broke her out in the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu with Colleen Wing to form Nightwing Restoration, you know, I wasn't working for Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. I was just doing other books. Mm-hmm. And so I never got to work on her again. That was my only shot. So I was pleased at reading about her adventures, and I was excited by the fact that a lot of what I wrote in her character Bible was being used, you know. I mean, all the way down the description of how what she wore and everything, that was being used. You know, John Byrne did it first in black and white, and then he tried to modify the costume into something else. And it looked like the X-Men's costume. And I was like, this is not Misty Knight, you know. You know, and she's a police officer. She's not going to be wearing a gaudy costume, you know. Right. And I complained. Right. and then they would make a correction. You know, they kind of respected it to a degree. And, you know, her costumes became a little, not modest in the least, but at least toned down, you know.
If I could ask,
I was excited.
Yeah, no doubt. I assume you were probably very excited to see that on the TV. You mentioned editors for a minute. Could I ask real quick, just two questions about that? What editors did you work under? Because there's been some big editors at Marvel, and also you work for DC as well. What editors did you work for?
I worked for a lot of different editors.
Well, who were some of the best ones to work for? Can I ask that? Who were some of the best ones to work for?
Best ones. You know, for me, the best editors were the ones that left me alone. So, you know, I mean, every editor I worked with was pretty good. You know, I would get the script. They gave me work. I'd get the script. I'd do the script. And every once in a great while, an editor would send the page back and said, this has to be redrawn. I think I had that happen maybe twice. But mostly they left me alone. Whatever I turned in, they were happy with. And, you know, some of my favorite kind of team ups. I didn't think of him as an editor. I thought because he was more of a collaborator with like Roy Thomas. Whenever I got to work with Roy and when we worked on All-Star Squadron, you know, he was sort of writing it and editing it. And then he would just, in some cases, he would say, hey, we're going to adopt, Starman doesn't have an origin. I said, no, he doesn't. He says, no, the classic Starman does not have an origin. And I said, really? He says, yeah. He said, we should do something about that. And I said, okay, Roy. And I'm waiting on a big script. And, you know, in that particular case, I got a good plot. I worked on that. And then there were other times when he'd just hand me an old reprint of a comic book and said, I think it was The Guardian, you know. He said, we're going to expand the origin of The Guardian. And I said, great. I'm waiting on the script. And he goes, you know the story, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, draw it. And I said, oh.
So was,
I said, how many pages, Roy? Whatever page count he gave me is what I conformed the story to.
Would you say that Starman was your favorite character to work on for All-Star Squadron? Or did you have some other favorites you liked to work on with that book?
Oh, you know, I think my favorite was the developing relationship between Johnny Quick and Liberty Bell that took place. Because over time, they went from casually knowing each other to having a romantic kind of engagement to then getting serious and then getting married. Mm-hmm. You know, so being able to grow a relationship in a comic book is something I'd never done before. And he only did it sparingly because those scenes were only happening between fights.
Yeah.
Because you had so many characters in All-Star Squadron, it was crazy. And that was really my first big team book because I tried to avoid that stuff, you know, those big team books. And Roy was like, well, you know, the way he got me into working at on All-Star Squadron, All-Star Squadron was he said, hey, you know, I had done some sketches for him when he was going to D.C. so he could use them for, you know, to pitch his ideas. And then he told me he never forgot that, you know, that I'd done that for him. So it took like 39 issues, but then he finally said, you know, I want you to do the second half of the story that Rich, you know, isn't going to be able to complete. And I said, okay. And he says, maybe you'd want to do All-Star Squadron. And I said, man, it's a team book. You know, there's a lot of characters. I'm not, I got to squeeze all these people in panels. I'm not sure if I want to do that. He says, well, you might want to do this one. And I said, okay, I'll do this one for you, Roy. What is it? He said, Superman versus Captain Marvel. Shazam. I said, oh, yeah, I want to do that. Then he said, the following issue, he was like, hey, you like working on us? I said, yeah, it's been fun, you know, man. He says, well, I got another fun one for you. We'll do Starman Doesn't Have an Origin. I said, okay. So we did that. So that was pretty much a single character. And he threw in Batman and Robin, even for it was only a panel or two, but I got to do Batman and Robin. So I said, cool. You know, another one off my bucket list, I guess, you know. Back
yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Even though it was only a couple of pages, I got to squeeze them in. So that was kind of fun. And then then he says, you like Jack Kirby, don't you? I said, oh, man, I love Jack Kirby. I love him. And he says, okay, well, which Jack Kirby character do you like the most? And I said, I don't know, maybe sort of at that time, you know, because I had to be a 40s character. So I only had like, you know, the Boy Commandos or the Newsboy Legion with the Guardian or the Sandman and Sandy. And so I said, Guardian. He said, oh, yeah, Guardian sounds good. So we did the origin of the Guardian. And then he said, you want to do another Starman story? And I said, yeah. So did another Starman story, but then we started creeping in a lot of the All-Star Squadron. And I did that and had a good time with it. And mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then he just stopped asking me after that. He just started adding more characters until I looked up and I said, wait a minute. I know we're dealing with all the characters from the DC universe from the 40s, but what's the Condor doing in here? And why is the Ray in here? And what's Uncle Sam doing in here? Yeah. He just kept adding characters. And I said, these are quality characters. These are Fawcett characters, you know. And I said, where are all these characters coming from? What's the Wave, you know, the Wave doing in here? And you know, he says, oh, DC acquired the rights to all these. We're going to use them all. Said, what have I signed on for?
Well, can we go back to your childhood for a minute? Because I always asked artists and creative folks, when you were a kid, were you very creative? Were you always doodling, always drawing, always spending time honing in on your art?
Yeah, I didn't look at it as that. When I was a kid, you know, drawing was like a pencil and some paper were my toys.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I have a very active imagination. And I'm just trying to get my ideas, you know, express myself, you know, mm-hmm. through my ideas and everything. So I was kind of obsessed with doing that. And that was, you know, partially because, you know, I don't know, being influenced by looking at TV and seeing some of the TV shows that were coming out back then, I just wanted to do stuff like that. I thought it would be a fun career. You know, I was kind of discouraged a lot because, you know, I'm living in Detroit. Pretty much anybody who's everybody is working in the automobile industry. And those were considered real jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do cartoons. Nobody seemed to, you know, there were no schools for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just didn't seem likely. You know, those jobs were rare jobs and only, you know, a few people got to do that stuff. And I saw this movie on television with Jack Lemmon, How to Murder Your Wife. You know, I was like looking at this guy's lifestyle. You know, he was staying in a penthouse. You know, he was getting married to a beautiful woman. He went to the men's club and, you know, hung out with his boys. Sure, he murdered, you know, he simulated murdering his wife. But it was research for a comic book. So all he was doing was playing with his imagination all the time. Happy-go-lucky, not a care in the world, you know. And I said, that's what I want to do. And then I started meeting people that had that same thought, you know.
Yeah, because I know from doing some research, there was a bunch of you guys from Michigan, you know, Rich Buckler and Jim Starlin, mm-hmm. and a lot of those guys that were, you know, you were all kind of a big group that were trying to get noticed. And
yeah, well, you know, part of that was, you know, we all were kind of in close proximity to one another. Like, I was in walking distance from Mike Vosburgh's house.
Okay.
And, you know, I would pick up fanzines and see his name in them and didn't realize he lived, like, maybe about 2 miles away, you know, at the most, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and then we just kind of met one day, you know, and same thing with Rich. I was at a used bookstore and I was working at the bookstore to, you know, I didn't know any better. I was young, you know, I wasn't interested in the money, but I was interested in in getting books and references and, you know, art books and comic books and whatever else I can find because I was obsessed with drawing and writing. And so I worked at a used bookstore so that I could, you know, so I could get more books than my allowance would allow me to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put them on a shelf and put things up high. And then I come back the next week to pick them up or, you know, after I finished, enough work where I could get them. And some of them would be gone. And I go, what the heck? What happened to the stuff that I was stashing? And then one day I was in there working and I just put some stuff away and sat down and was opening a box of other books that had to be sorted. And this tall guy comes in with his long blonde hair and walks over to where I am. And I'm putting all this stuff up on the top shelf and toward the back. And he went straight to my hiding spot and pulled the books down. And I said, hey, those books are not for sale. He looked around and said, this is a bookstore, isn't it? And so we had a little altercation, you know, those are not for sale. Those are my books and I'm putting them away. They're my payment for working in here, doing signs and, you know, going through all these books and picking out the choice books that I want. And here you come messing that up. And he goes, you know, well, I'm the customer and I'm always right. So, you know, these books are for sale. But he got some of the choice stuff, you know.
And before you know it, you and Rich and all the guys would be making trips out to New York City, correct? To try to show your portfolio off, right? To some of the big wigs at DC, Marvel and whatnot, correct?
Oh, yeah. That's eventually where it went. But, you know, between that, we were going to these shows or they would come to Detroit, to the Detroit Triple Fanfare, which was one of the first conventions. Mm-hmm. And it was organized by a guy named Shell Dwarf. And I always try to mention his name in these interviews because he was one of the, between him and Professor Jerry Bales of Wayne State University, you know, who also helped mentor and help get this fan thing going. You know, they were both instrumental in starting the Detroit Triple Fanfare. And Shell Dwarf, he eventually moved to San Diego and helped organize and start the San Diego Comic-Con, which became Comic-Con International.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Bales, he, you know, just kept a lot of us engaged and, you know, as fans, and made us feel legitimate because he was, you know, a college professor. And his assistant at one point was Roy Thomas. So, you know, we couldn't help it. You know, we kept running into people who, you know, who had this interest. And as fandom grew, we watched these people get into the business. So, you know, I watched Roy get into the business and become an assistant editor to Stan Lee and be called Roy the Boy Thomas. and then, you know, we'd see some other people, a guy named T. Casey Brennan, who do some comics for, I think, Charlton.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of let us know we kept meeting people and going to Comic-Con. And one day, you know, one time we went and Al Williamson came to town. He was working on Flash Gordon. And we got to see that work and his Secret Agent X9 stuff. And we just bombard him with questions and everything. And then we would see anybody else with a portfolio and we'd start talking to one another. You know, hey, you're trying to draw comics. So am I. Let me see what you got. Let me see what kind of stuff you look like. And then we would exchange numbers. And eventually we would start meeting on the weekends, swapping comics, telling stories about other artists or writers that we met and mm-hmm. what information they tried to share. We would try to share it amongst ourselves. And then we kind of made a pact that, if one of us actually gets in, let's help everybody else get in. So we kind of made a pact to help each other get in the business. Rich was first. Starlin and Tom Orzechowski were, you know, like second and third. And then Al Milgram. And then myself. And then Keith Pollard. And then Terry Austin. And it just kept going, you know. I mean,
Speaking of keep going, you mentioned to me in Monroe at the Monroe Pop Fest, you have a new project coming out. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about the project?
Oh, yeah. Some other guys that always wanted to get into comics, so, you know, one of them had been a comic book retailer. And his name is Noel Breitner. And he used to run a comic book shop called Gotham Knights. And he was a big fan of, you know, comics in general. And he decided that he would form a comic book company. And he was kind of looking around for some projects along with another friend of mine who he was starting his own comic company and put out 4 titles. And he also wanted to expand. His name is Gerald Tion Walker or G. Tion Walker, as he called himself. You know, so I kind of introduced them to one another and they were looking for projects to do. And I had a project that was laying around from a West Coast rap artist. I was approached by his publicity people They were getting ready to release their first, he was getting ready to release his first CD. They were looking for a unique way of packaging it all up. So he decided to do it as a comic book. And I talked to him on the phone, and he had an interesting story. And, you know, like most, hip hop rap artists, you know, most of his, this particular rap he had and things like that was all about him. And, but it was interesting how he was framing everything. And then he wanted to go into more detail about it. He said, I want to release this thing as the first, soundtrack that, you know, accompanies a comic book. I said, what? This sounds like fun. And, he kind of shaped the story, and I kind of helped a little bit, you know, kind of mold it. We worked kind of Marvel style. He kind of gave me, you know, the events. We shaped it into a story and put it out. And then it kind of sat there for a while. And then I guess the record company he was working with went bankrupt. And
oh, man.
He said, screw it. You know, I'm just going to put this out myself. So, you know, he came back to me and said, what do we need to do to finish this? I said, well, you know, let me pull some of the old gang together. So, you know, I called Bob Wycheck to do inking and called Tom Warsikowski to do lettering. And we lettered and inked everything. And then at the time, computer color was just really getting going. So my brother Desmond, who had worked at Marvel for a short time, agreed that he would put the book together and he would also participate in doing some of the coloring. And I got another guy who I knew who had been an art director at one of the big department stores. And he said, you know, I can color this thing. I've been studying computer coloring and things like that. And I said, well, okay, do a few pages. Lazarus liked how it looked. So we put the whole job together, and then it sat again.
Did you think it was cursed, maybe?
Huh?
Did you think it was maybe cursed? Like it was just one of those projects you weren't going to get done?
Well, I didn't own the title. And, you know, so I just kind of had to take it for what it was. You know, I just, put my big boy pants on and move on. And every once in a while, you call me up and said, you know, that comic book project I put so much money into, I still want to put it out. So I said, okay. And these guys, Noel and Tion, had sort of gotten together and around the same time and said to me, well, do you have any projects? And I said, well, I got something that I'm working on. And I said, I do have, he said, you know, Tion said to me, well, you showed me a project you were working on years ago about this hip hop artist. And I said, yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, he just called me. Said, yeah. Who's this publisher? I said, he doesn't have a publisher anymore. And he says, well, let's publish that. So he put us on the phone with him. So they made a deal. And voila, the name of the book is called Reign of the Underdog, featuring Lazarus, which is the hip-hop artist's name, Lazarus. And, you know, it was recolored, and they put it out. And, you know, I'm happy to see it happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The story and the way it was framed was Lazarus kind of tells, it's a semi-autobiographical science fiction novel set in the future. And the trick is to look at, you know, what's in the book. And I asked Lazarus, I said, well, how much of this is true? How much of this is, you know, made up stuff? He said, well, I said it in the future, so that would be made up. And I said, well, why aren't you in jail? Some of the stuff you did in here seems like, you know, people die. You know, and he says, well, that's for the reader to figure out, you know. Some of it is exaggerated.
I said,
exaggerated. Okay. He said, so people don't die? He said, no, people die.
So where can folks find a copy of this book?
Well, they just did an exclusive printing of the book. You can, I guess, Google Reign of the Underdog featuring Lazarus. And there should be a website in which you can, you know, there's a limited run that was done for the San Diego Comic-Con, which made it a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive. But then there will be another printing for retail. But they're going to do it as a Kickstarter. That should be starting sometime in October.
Okay.
I don't have a clear date yet from the publishers. But, you know, they got a couple of extra, you know, covers that they're doing and some pinups and some other things that they're going to add to the package. And so it's going to be a more complete package that's being done. But they'll have a larger run.
Okay.
Than what was available at the San Diego Comic Con. I've got a few copies. If you can find me at some of these Comic Cons, I got some of those. And I know there's a few bookstores that ordered a few of the exclusive comics that, you know, they should be getting their hands on them now because they decided to wait for releasing any of the unsold copies from the limited run until give it a couple of months break since it was supposed, you know, it was a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to release a few of those. Those are, you know, collectibles. And then they're going to do a larger, more, a fuller production run. And that should happen in a Kickstarter in October.
Okay.
And you can look up resurgencecomics.com, the publishers, and they might have some more information. I haven't looked at that site yet. I'm not even sure if they've really launched it.
All right.
This time, but I know they'll have it launched by the time the Kickstarter goes.
There you go.
And it's www.resurgencecomics.com.
All right. Well, you mentioned it real quick, Arvell, as we're getting close to our time limit here. You mentioned that folks can maybe find you at various different Comic Cons and pick up one of these books. So where are you going to be in the next few weeks?
Well, I'm this weekend I'm in Marine City in Michigan for a one-day con. And then in a couple of weeks, I'll be sometime in October. I don't have the exact date in front of me. I think by mid-October, I'll be at the what used to be the Mid-Ohio Con. It's now the Wizard World Comic Con in Columbus, Ohio. So I'll be at Wizard World Columbus.
I believe that date is the 18th, 19th, and 20th of October, actually. I know that offhand.
Wow. Okay.
So I know Mr. Brian Lau, friend of the show, is going to be down there at the Wizard World Columbus. That's how I know that off the top of my head.
Oh, okay. Well, heck, you're the kind of guy that'll make a great sidekick. Yeah.
I've been told that. Any other appearances here after Wizard World? Anything else towards the end of October or November or the end of the year?
Nothing towards the end of the year. I've kind of winded down because I'm buckling down on a new project that I'm working on. Another one of those. It's a project actually I had sold to Marvel. It was supposed to be a Marvel graphic novel around the time that Jim Starlin produced the Metamorphosis Odyssey. And Marvel was allowing creators to create graphic novels and keep the rights. And for mine, though, I got about a third of the way to completing it, and they decided to discontinue the program. They kept doing some of it with, I guess it's called Epic Comics.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, they were doing them as graphic novels. And I kind of paced mine out to be a graphic novel. You know, was a little too busy to go back and reformat it for a regular-sized comic book, you know. So I got that title back. It's still mine, actually. But, you know, I got all of the original artwork and everything back for it. And I decided it was good enough for Marvel to consider publishing it. And the only reason it wasn't published is I was a little slow at turning it in. I think now would be a great time.
There you go.
I'm going to withhold the concept and everything for the time being. As I get a little closer, though, I'll be, you know, invite me back and I'll tell you.
You got it. You got it. So where can folks find you? Do you have a website where folks can keep tabs on you and this project so that they can know when it's coming out?
Yeah. The www.arvell.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
and you know, I guess everybody can also look me up on my Facebook or my Instagram, although I don't do a lot of social networking, but at least that website will have some information. And I might even publish this with Resurgence again. So they're certainly interested in it. And you know, there's some local guys and you know, I like supporting the homeboys in the area. So you know, so whatever we can do together, you know, I'm excited about. So
there you go. Well, Arvell, yep. Jones, it's been a pleasure. We're getting up to about 50 minutes here, and I want to let you go because I imagine you got lots of stuff to do. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule today to sit down and chat with me.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. And like I said, have me back.
You got it. You got it. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Arvell Jones. It was a pleasure and an honor to have him on the PVD cast, and I will definitely have him back on. I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed all of his behind-the-scenes stories that he shared with us. And you know what? Maybe you enjoyed them just as much as I did, or maybe you didn't. But why don't you let me know? And you could do that a couple different ways. First of all, you can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. That's my personal Twitter handle. You could shoot me an email, and that email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You could even leave me a message over on the Facebook page of this podcast. That, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. And let me tell you where you can find this wonderful podcast. Like, you need to know this. You already know where to get it. But, you know, just in case you want to tell your coworker or your friend or your uncle, you can tell them that it's basically everywhere. PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, which is a great place to hear it. But it's also available through iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Deezer, Radio.com app, the Libsyn Podcast Player, the Echo Network, Pod Paradise, just basically wherever you find podcasts, you'll find the PVDcast. All you got to do is search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, PVDcast John Orlando, and there you go, you're sure to find it. So before I wrap things up, I want to let you know that today's podcast was brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.